You're listening to the Jason Greger Show podcast, brought to you by Lakewood Chev. They will steer you straight with a 39.95 wheel alignment. Check it out at lakewoodchev.com.
Reiner Schock from TSN joins us. Schock, I'm not sure how much of the Carey Fraser interview you heard or not, but Fraser felt like the first goal on Anaheim, he probably, if it was him reviewing it, he would have overturned it. However, he did have an interesting point of view as far as the conversation with the officials and the video replay room and what have you, where the policy on all of this is made by the rules committee, and that he says in a lot of cases you're probably not going to have young officials arguing with their superiors over a call. What do you think of that?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that's... No, do you mean the young officials on the ice or the young officials in the war room?
No, the ones on the ice arguing with the guys in the war room, because they're the ones usually in the war room are the policy makers.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I don't know exactly what that dynamic would be like. I would think that a veteran referee would be pretty confident that whoever he's got on the phone would have the confidence to say, this is what I saw and this is what I still see. That's what would qualify these guys to be NHL referees. I don't think that they take junior guys along on these trips very often. So, I mean, I understand what Carey's saying. He's been involved a lot closer than I have. But I just think that, I think just by human nature, when you make a decision and then you're offered the opportunity to take a look at it again, you're naturally, in a lot of cases, going to be swayed towards upholding your original decision. So, I mean, and Nielsen made this point this morning, and I thought it was an astute one. Let's say Cam Talbot falls down when Corey Perry comes through. Immediately that goal gets waved off with the referee knowing he's going to check for goaltender interference and make sure. Then he's all of a sudden looking at that video with the idea in mind that he'd called the goal off and maybe sees it differently. So it's difficult to ask these guys to overturn their own calls, but to me it was the wrong call based on the standard and what we've watched and everything that we've seen. That was not the right call at an important moment of the game, and yes, it affected the game significantly, but in the grand scheme of things, the Oilers had a lot bigger problems last night than whatever the officials were handing them.
Now that's the point I want to get to, Ryan, because you can talk about the officials all day long, but
yes,
the reality is, and even if the first call, most agree that, you know what, that probably shouldn't have been a goal. Okay,
yeah.
So let's say they got screwed there. We can all most agree with that. Okay, they got screwed there. That doesn't mean you should just fold your tent and allow them to dominate the remaining 18 minutes and 23 seconds of the second period.
Yeah, and I don't know that it has anything to do with the Oilers folding their tent so much as it has to do with the Ducks opening theirs up and planting it firmly where the Oilers' tent was. I mean, it's a chicken and an egg, right? The Oilers played a great first period and looked dominant, so were the Ducks playing well too, and the Oilers' best game just dominated them, or were the Ducks pretty bad in that first period? I think the Ducks were pretty bad in that first period, and when they woke up and brought their game, I think they dominated the Oilers. So the Oilers are playing against a team that 5-on-5 can vastly outplay them, in my opinion, and that's a big problem for them. They need to find a way to take some momentum back at even strength, and they're having trouble doing it because they're getting like face-offs. You know, you can debate all through the regular season, right? Like the San Jose Sharks were not a great face-off team, went to the Stanley Cup final last year. People think they're not a big deal sometimes, and maybe sometimes they aren't, but I'm telling you, I bet if Todd McClellan could choose one thing to fix on his team between now and next game, it would be the face-off circle. I think the face-off circle is having a devastating impact on the Oilers in this series because of the way it's allowing Anaheim to dictate the matchup game. I think it's been crushing to them, and there's no sign that it's going to get any better because they just don't have the personnel.
Yeah, they're not going to win the face-off battle. So what they have to do is improve at getting the puck back or on the red. Because what I saw last night was there was a stretch where the Oilers actually won 3 face-offs in a row, Ryan, and they did absolutely nothing with the puck. Twice they won the draw and then just handed it back to the Ducks. So face-offs are an important stat to a sense, but a lot of it is, can you maintain possession and build off of it? And the Oilers obviously are never going to be able to do that in this series. So they're going to have to look to do other things. And I wonder, and I know Stradzo, when he comes on, we're going to talk about it. Do you think at all, because of Getzlaff's size and strength advantage down the middle, is there a chance you would contemplate moving Drysdale there to match him up to see if his size could at least potentially slow down Getzlaff a bit?
Well, Drysdale is an important player, and giving him a defensive matchup, I think, is going to diminish what he's going to be able to produce offensively. I don't think the Oilers are going to be able to win this series if Draisaitl isn't producing.
But even if he's on the offense, right? What if he goes out there and forces Getzlaf to have to play a little bit more defense at the same time?
Okay, right. And maybe he'd be able to win that matchup. The bigger question to me is, like, McClellan has been okay with either of his top two D pairings being out there against Kessler or Getzlaf, right? If you look at the even strength minutes against the top four defensemen, it was mainly Klefbom and Larson, but Secker and Russell were within a couple of minutes. So really a minute and a half to 2 minutes between them. I'm wondering if he should be contemplating more of a hard match with a D pairing. And I suggested this morning, and Struds and I did a hit for TSN.ca today, where he believes that Larson is tailor-made for that role. Now, Darcy McLeod, or Wood Guy on Twitter, when I tweeted that, came back at me with the numbers, and the numbers definitely show that Sekera and Russell have much better possession numbers against Getzlaf when you include last night's game. But the idea of matching Russell against Ryan Getzlaf makes you kind of go, holy smokes, that's not a great matchup. So
his speed becomes, is, though, and I think that's the
yeah,
the
and that's a great, and that's an excellent point that, okay, maybe he's not going to be more physical than Getzlaf. Larson can maybe handle him physically, but maybe it is more about foot speed. Maybe it is more about containing and less about taking out. And so maybe Sekera and Russell are the proper matchup. However, this is why Adam Larson was brought here. This exact challenge, this exact issue. Who do you put out there against the world-class players? The other guys are rolling over the gates, or rolling through the gates. And the answer is Adam Larson. So to not use him in this situation, that's what he was brought here for. And I think McClellan has not tried to use a hard, hard match with a D pairing, kind of the way Vlasic did against McDavid. And I wonder if he needs to consider it. I asked him today and he said, maybe. Or possibly. Yeah. Another one of those one-word answers that he's been throwing at us lately. I love those.
And the other thing about that, the numbers that Darcy puts out, just saying one defense pair, it's okay. Which forwards are on the ice with them? Are they out with the same forwards? How much of that zone time started in the defensive zone? Like, it's a number that's great, but then you've got to really divulge into everything else.
Yeah, no, but he did. I mean, check out his Twitter account. You'll see he followed it up with which centers were out there and stuff. I mean, it's valuable information that Sekera and Russell are getting a better share of the shots when they're out there against Getzlaf than the other two guys are, right? So it creates a conundrum for the coach, because Larson might be the better matchup physically. Russell's numbers look better. Do they even go with a hard match at all with a D pairing? And it creates an issue for him that he's got to figure out here.
The numbers say Russell's good, man. That must really screw all the numbers, guys, who said Russell was terrible. So for me, the one big advantage, though, Struds and I talked about this yesterday, is that Carlisle ensures he gets not only the matchups he wants on the ice, Ryan, but the matchups in the faceoff dot. Like last night, Nugent Hopkins was just getting toyed with. He was 1 for 11. Like there is losing, and then there's not even showing up in the faceoff.
Yeah, well, did you also see what Carlisle was doing out of the commercial breaks in the third period? So to start the third period, and then out of every commercial break,
yeah,
he was going Getzlaf and Kessler, and then he would wait to see who McClellan put on the ice. So when McClellan put McDavid on the ice, the Ducks win the draw, and Getzlaf will skate off, and now you've got your Kessler on McDavid matchup. In overtime, Todd started Nugent Hopkins against Kessler and Getzlaf. Kessler skated off the ice. Now he's got his Getzlaf Nugent Hopkins matchup. It's a really smart way, when you know you're going to win the faceoff, to kind of take away last change advantage. You put both guys out there, and he can do that because they're winning faceoffs, but he can also do it because both guys are rested coming out of commercial breaks.
Well, and he has the advantage because he knows that even if he loses the faceoff, that he has some better personnel matchups, right? When people have always said, "Well, McClellan, I can't believe he's doing this," he doesn't have as many bullets right now in his holster, because he can throw it there. Like last night, he'd be like, "Well, I guess I better put out Letestu and Desharnais because that's my best chance to win a faceoff."
Yeah, bullets go in the gun, and the gun goes in the holster. Just
sure.
FYI, there.
Whatever, you knew
the
what
bullets
I was
don't necessarily go. I mean, they sort of go in the holster.
Well, they kind of go in the holster. They're in the gun, right? With Richard Post in the holster, right? Jordan Eberle, brutal play on the first goal, no doubt about it. Well, two plays, I guess. Got demoted to the fourth line. I would keep him there for next game. What would you do?
Yeah, I don't think they can just pop him back up onto that second line and say, have at her again. I think it's one thing if he's not producing the way you want him to. It's a completely different thing when he's costing you. And that play cost them. It was a really bad look. Everybody's seen it. He heard footsteps and pulled the chute a little bit and threw the puck up the boards to the spot that, well, that's his defenseman that he's supposed to be covering. It was a really ugly play. So there was that one, but there were a lot. Like, you go to that overtime goal, man, you watch Milan Lucic on the boards. You can't let Ryan Getzlaf step right in front of you and take the puck. You got to stay on the defensive side of the puck. And Getzlaf just walked right in front of Lucic. So Adam Larson with that play was no good too. Nugent Hopkins had one on his stick in front of his own net that he could have quickly cleared and didn't. All three of those players had significant mistakes that led to goals against, and that's three of the four goals.
Cam Talbot pretty hot after the game, for Cam Talbot anyway, and said, hey, I might have to start diving and flopping. Do you think he does that on Friday?
No, I don't think so. I mean, he sort of is who he is, and I don't know that he starts trying to play the game different or train a new instinct into himself suddenly. I liked what he said. I thought he was honest. I thought it was a good, fair point. And I think, you know, the frustration level he felt after that game was, it was legit, and I think he had a good reason to feel that way. So other goalies do dive around a little bit. The risk you take is they don't call it, and now you've left your net empty. And I don't think that he's going to start trying to suddenly go, oh, I got to do this or I got to do that. I think he's just going to play his game. And I thought he was really good for the Oilers last night. I thought he made some. He did not give up the 4-2 goal.
Oh, yeah. That,
and they had
true,
tons
yeah.
of opportunities.
Yeah, I had no problem with it. The Oilers aren't out of the series. Like, it's only 2-2, but they've got to try to find some sort of way to contain.
Well, it's 2-2. And, like, they had about a 15-minute practice this morning. They're upbeat. They're trying to feel good about where they're at in this series, and they should. It's 2-2. But the Ducks have carried 90% of the momentum through the last three games. They have been the better team through basically the last three games, minus a couple stretches here and there, first period last night. So how you feel good about that if you're the Oilers, knowing that, never mind 2-2, the flow of this series is the Ducks are taking them to the woodshed for a lot of play. But it's a long series. The momentum shifts are significant.
Oh,
and they
yeah.
were last series too, frankly.
Yeah, they were. And, hey, the Oilers, the way they dominated the first period, they just have to find a way to not necessarily maintain that, because it's hard to dominate to that level, but they have to find a way to not drop off a cliff like they did in the second period. Find a way,
yeah,
okay,
sure.
if we peak, then let's even it out for a while, right? And then and at least withstand the surge that eventually occurs. Shogger,
exactly.
Have a safe flight, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Okay, pal. Take care.